This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It will stretch 4 months, if not years.
That's political science professor Hamdi Hassan at Cairo University talking about how the conflict between Israel and Hamas could take a long time to resolve. Details coming up. Also, Gabon's military-appointed government says it will invest about $11.6 million seized from President Ali Bongo. And Liberians vote for president and legislators tomorrow. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. More than 2 days after Hamas launched its unprecedented incursion out of Gaza, Israel has launched scores of airstrikes against Hamas fighters, and the death toll on both sides is rising fast. Our VOA reporter Linda Grandstein is standing by in Tel Aviv with the latest. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me, Linda?
Again.
Okay, we have some technical difficulties. We will be back with Linda. But first, Egyptian officials are calling for calm as the conflict between Israel and Hamas rages in the third day of hostilities. The calls come after Israel intensifies its attack on Gaza a day following its official declaration of war on Hamas. Meanwhile, members of the African Union, including Egypt, are calling for calm and a solution to end the conflict. For the latest on the conflict, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Mohamed Wadi. He's an Egyptian and Middle East analyst and editor-in-chief of the Saad El Balad news website and satellite television channel.
Egypt had urged Israel to exercise restraint and Hamas to hold its captives in good condition to keep open the possibility of de-escalation soon. Successive strikes on Gaza Strip made the mediation in somehow difficult, as you know. But the Egyptian foreign ministry warned both sides of grave consequences. If we go to the Egyptian people's in service, if you watch it, the social media in Egypt, some Egyptians expressed their solidarity with Palestinians, and some others are sympathizing with the Israeli people who are civilians.
How is Egypt preparing or prepared to handle the refugee situation?
As you know, Egypt now have about 12 million refugees from other countries like Sudan, Libya, Iraq, Syria. So there are about 12 million people live in Egypt. And during this economic crisis, they're making a load on the government to save the subsidies to this big number. Historically, Egypt plays a significant role in mediating the Israeli and the Palestinian tension. And also the borders. Egypt many times opened its borders to Palestinians during the times of conflict. Egyptians offering refugees, not from Palestinian itself, but from other countries, medical aid. And I think Egypt, if it reached an agreement with the Israeli side, I think Egypt will open its border this time and cooperate with international organizations to manage refugee flows.
From where you stand now, where do you think things will go from here? After Egypt called for calm, the international community is calling for restraint, and Egypt acting as mediator for years.
So Egypt is advising Israel how to deal with this situation, because the situation is very difficult. The situation is very difficult, and there will be many casualties, especially human casualties. And as you know, after 3 days of this conflict, despite global calls for peace, there is something remains uncertain and intense. The international community is likely to intensify diplomatic efforts to secure a ceasefire and potentially initiate peace talks.
That was Mohamed Wadi, an Egyptian and Middle East analyst and editor-in-chief of the Sada El Balad News website and satellite television channel, speaking with VOA's Peter Kloti. And for more on the Israel-Hamas conflict, our VOA reporter Linda Grinstein is standing by in Tel Aviv. Welcome to African News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you.
So, Linda, where is this fighting going on?
Well, right now, the fighting is going on primarily in Gaza. Israel has launched hundreds of airstrikes on Gaza, and the death toll there is expected to rise. There were also rockets fired from Gaza to large parts of Israel today, again, even to Jerusalem, which is about 70 kilometers from Gaza. There are reports of a few people wounded seriously. And meanwhile, the death toll in Israel has now risen to above 900 after 100 bodies were found on one kibbutz. A kibbutz is like a communal settlement near the border with Gaza.
At least 100 Israeli citizens and soldiers have been taken hostage, too. Do you have any information about that?
Well, yes, Hamas is threatening to execute them if it doesn't get prisoners released. Apparently, there are some indirect negotiations going on in which Hamas offered to release the women and children in exchange for Palestinian women who are in Israeli jails. But I don't know how advanced those negotiations are. Among the hostages are young children, an 85-year-old grandmother. I actually spoke to her granddaughter yesterday, and she said that her grandmother was taken without her medicine, and she's ill, and she's, of course, very concerned about her fate. So the hostages is something that's really unprecedented. There was one Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, who was held for 5 years by Hamas, and in exchange for his freedom, Israel released more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. So Hamas is demanding that all prisoners eventually be released. But the hostage thing is something that Israel has never dealt with before. And the number of casualties, this is the largest single-day death total in 75 years of Israel's existence.
And let's talk about the impact on the airline industry. Dozens of flights to and from Tel Aviv were canceled by major airlines, citing security situation in Israel. Is the impact being felt over there?
Well, not quite yet. It will, in the past, there have been various conflicts between Israel and Gaza that have lasted for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks. And, of course, it takes several months, if not more, for tourism to rebound. In this case, it seems that the conflict between Israel and Hamas is going to be quite protracted. There's a thought that Israel called up several hundred thousand reservists and seems to be preparing for a ground invasion of Gaza. So, of course, that's going to affect, tourism in the long run. Some airlines and some countries are running emergency flights. There have been special flights for Israelis living in America, reservists who wanted to get back to their units.
And I asked you this earlier, Israel's security forces and much of the national security world at large were caught off guard on Saturday when Hamas militants from Gaza launched a surprise attack on Israel. And intelligent analysts are saying this is a colossal Israeli intelligence failure. Talk to us a little about that.
Sure. I mean, it's actually hard to believe that Israel, with its sophisticated intelligence, had no idea that Hamas was preparing this attack for, you know, months, if not over a year. It's hard to believe that apparently 1,000 Hamas militants breached the wall between Israel and Gaza and just walked right into Gaza. Now, some of it was because it was the Jewish Sabbath and the Jewish holidays, so the Israeli bases had sort of a skeleton crew. But still, it's just hard to understand how this could have happened and why it was such a failure. The only answer that I've seen that makes some sense is that Israel was A, underestimated Hamas and its capabilities, and B, was more concerned of an attack from the West Bank, which is much closer to central Israel rather than from Gaza.
And lastly, Linda, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has asked Palestinians to leave the Gaza Strip on Saturday and said the army will turn Hamas sites into rubble. How does the population feel with this kind of threat coming next?
Well, people in Gaza are terrified. I mean, about 120,000 people have left their homes, but there really isn't anywhere to go outside of the Gaza Strip. Israel, of course, is not letting them in. And the other exit is Egypt. And, you know, there's some people that are saying to avert a humanitarian crisis that Egypt should open its borders and let Palestinians from Gaza. So the people who've left their homes, many of them are sheltering in schools and other things that are being run by the United Nations. But unlike Israel, where they can leave the area that's being bombarded in Gaza, it's a very small, densely populated area, and there are already whole neighborhoods that have been completely flattened. Now, Israel says that Hamas intentionally puts its fighters and its infrastructure in the middle of civilian areas, making it impossible for Israel to distinguish between the Hamas areas and the civilian areas. But the number that we're hearing is at least 600 have been killed in the Israeli bombardment, and the number of Gaza, which has been going on now for about 24 hours, and the number is probably much higher.
Our VOA reporter, Linda Gradstein, standing by in Tel Aviv. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
A political analyst says the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict may have far-reaching consequences impacting countries like Egypt, Libya, Sudan, and beyond. Hamdi Hassan, a professor of political science at Cairo University, warns that if the escalation in Gaza persists, the 6-month-long conflict in Sudan, which has already claimed over 9,000 lives, might not receive the necessary attention required for resolution.
The surprise attack of Hamas and the declaring of war from the side of Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, it will stretch 4 months, if not years, this time. Taken in our consideration the large number of casualties among the Israeli and the penetration of the war, I think this is unprecedented. You know. So now it depends on the longevity of the war, the intensity of the war. And it could be a kind of a spillover at a regional level with the suspicion that Iran has a hand in this one. You know that Egypt is bordering Gaza, and if there is continued attacks from the Israeli bombers on Gaza, many refugees could try to cross the border, causing issues concern for Egypt also.
And Egypt is already dealing with a lot of refugees coming from Sudan, from the Sudan conflict.
Yeah, and from the south, yes, in Sudan, and you have in Libya, and this is it would be surrounded with the uncertainty and instability in our border. So I think this is one of the scary scenario that facing not only Egypt, but the whole region. And all options are on the table for the Israeli, for the retaliation, and to respond.
Yes.
So nothing clear for now.
Yes.
Nothing clear for now.
You mentioned that this might prove to be a protracted and really big conflict, another one in the region. And just over the weekend, the conflict in Sudan, local sources reported that the death toll surpassed 9,000 in this now 6 months long conflict. Observers have already been saying that the Sudan conflict is not being paid sufficient attention and the level of diplomacy involved in addressing it is not adequate. Now we have another major conflict in the region. Do you share the concerns that Sudan will now receive less attention?
So this is why we say that it will go beyond the consequences of the war in Gaza between Hamas and Israel. It will go beyond the Middle East, and it will affect the global, the global system itself. That you have the war in Ukraine, which is impacted economy, the global economy, the food prices, and et cetera, et cetera. Now you have the war in Sudan, which is paid less attention, and as you said, a lot of casualties. But in 2 days, you have more than 1,000 got killed in both Israel and Gaza. So if we wait for more 2 days or months, so how many people will be victims for this ongoing war,
yes,
which is now an open war, according to the Israeli declaration. So it will be adding more untrouble for the unstable balance in the Middle East.
That's Professor of Political Science at Cairo University, Hamdi Hassan. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the United Arab Emirates this past hour. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Liberians are ready to vote for president and legislators tomorrow. Dennis Nipson has more from Monrovia.
Incumbent President George Weah faces 19 challenges as he seeks a second six-year term in Liberia's fourth post-war national elections. The National Elections Commission, NEC, has confirmed there are 2.4 million registered voters across Liberia's 15 counties. The polls will open at 5,890 from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., although people still in line at closing time will be given the opportunity to cast their ballots. Under the constitution, results are to be announced within 15 days, with the next saying there will be daily updates to ensure the public is informed. Local and international observers have expressed preparedness for monitoring the elections process throughout the country. Stakeholders, civil society organizations, foreign missions, and citizens are vigorously stressing the need for peaceful vote. The forerunners for president include Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change and former Vice President Joseph Nyuma Boakai of the Main Opposition Unity Party. The field also includes two women. One of them is listed as an independent. The key issues include jobs, the state of economy and education, healthcare, illegal drugs, and accountability issues such as corruption, the rule of law, and governance. Elections for all races shall be determined by an absolute majority of the votes cast. If no candidates obtain an absolute majority in the first ballot, a runoff between the top two vote getters shall be conducted 2 weeks after the election. For VOAs, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
Gabon's military-appointed government says it will invest about $11.6 million and distribute close to 350 luxury vehicles said to be part of ill-gotten wealth recovered from family and friends of ousted President Ali Bongo since the military junta took power about 6 weeks ago. The government says the money will be used to provide public social amenities such as water, electricity and education. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Gabon's military junta says the government appointed by transitional president General Brice Clotaire Oligui-Nguema has begun consultations to determine how best to use the items recovered from state functionaries and business executives under the rule of ousted President Ali Ben Bongo. Raymond Dong-Sima is Gabon's prime minister. Sima says Nguema instructed him to meet with all government ministers before investing ill-gotten wealth recovered by the military junta since it seized power on August 30. He says Nguema has launched an irreversible battle against impunity and corruption, and the military junta's government wants to recover all ill-gotten wealth. Sima said on Gabon State TV on Monday that the junta has recovered about $11.6 million and close to 350 luxury vehicles over the past 45 days. Nguema told Gabon State TV that he has issued guidelines on how to distribute the recovered vehicles. Nguema says the 344 vehicles his government recovered from current and past senior state functionaries and partners of former President Ali Bongo should be distributed to government institutions, especially schools, universities, hospitals and water and electricity companies that need them to improve the conditions of citizens. The junta has not said who the funds and vehicles were seized from, nor explained how they were recovered. In September, the junta said it had arrested and detained Nurudin Bongo Valentin, son of ousted President Ali Bongo, as well as five of the deposed leader's aides and members of his cabinet. They were charged with various crimes that included treason and corruption. The military said Sylvia Bongo Ondimba, the ousted president's wife, is being held under house arrest for corruption, money laundering, and misappropriation of Gabon state funds. Video of troops searching the homes of former cabinet members and seizing trunks, suitcases, and bags filled with banknotes were shown on state TV. Joseph Marie Efodu is a lecturer in political science at the University of Yaoundé. He says Nguema does not want to be seen as someone who betrayed the public in Gabon, which appears to support the August 30 coup. Before the coup, the Bongo family ruled Gabon for 56 years.
C'est la question de que faisons-nous maintenant?
He says Nguema is carrying out historic changes less than 45 days after he seized power to prove to the international community that the military junta he leads saved Gabon from a long iron-fisted rule that impoverished civilians of the oil-producing nation. By doing so, he says Nguema expects the international community to lift sanctions imposed to press for a return to civilian rule in Gabon. Gabon's opposition and civil society groups say the government also needs to investigate real estate empires and huge amounts of money hidden in foreign banks by the Bongo family and their close aides. They say bringing back the money could ease high levels of poverty. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.